Welcome to the pilot commentary for season one of Sons of Anarchy. My name is Kurt Sutter.
I'm Katie Segal. I play Gemma Teller.
Charlie Hunnam. I play Jax Teller.
Ron Perlman, Clay Morrow.
This is our first commentary for the show.
So forgive us.
So we're completely ill-prepared. I have my three actors right off of the set during lunch.
We're digesting.
They're chewing.
Some of us are still eating.
I think one of the things that that fans have been most interested in is just I get a lot of questions about what was my perception of the MC, the motorcycle club world, and then if and how did that change once I got involved with the show. And I'm just sort of curious as to what people's perception was coming in.
About what a motorcycle club is?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I thought it was nothing like what I came to find out it was. I was, I know you went, Kurt, you went to do some research and came back with a lot of information about how formal it was, how many rules and regulations there were, how it's really run like a tight ship. So I didn't know any of that. I really had no idea exactly what a motorcycle club was.
Did you feel, everyone sort of has preconceived, notions of stereotypes and stuff. Did you have any of those?
Well, I didn't know they were quite so hot.
What about you, Charlie?
I guess the thing that surprised me the most was just the love involved between these guys. I went as I could and spent a little time with some MCs before we started shooting. And the thing that struck me most, and I think that we've been really successful in showing on the show, is that these guys are really a family and live and die for each other. Some of them, it's the only family they have, and I think that they find a place, that they belong in these clubs and really cherish it. And because of that, as most of us would do anything to protect their family.
About you, Ron?
Yeah, I really didn't know anything about the EMC world at all. You see them riding down the street, and your impression is, these are a bunch of guys, out thrill seekers. They're thrill seekers, mm-hmm. That's the way I looked at it, and it's all social. It's all, they got stuck in some, whatever period of their lives, during their development, they fell in love with it, and that they refused to kind of leave that period, so that they were going to spend the rest of their lives rebelling against whatever else came, time, outside influences, etc., and stay in that. That's what I thought. But I came to find out, first because of all the great research Kurt had done and his point of view, that these places are societies in and of themselves. They're almost like sovereign nations. Mm. They're responsible for their own well-being in terms of earning money, and they are responsible for the safety of, each other. And it's a real society. Everyone has a task, and they're autonomous, and they're very serious about, they're as serious as any sovereign nation about their own preservation. Hmm.
Ron, you didn't turn your bike off in that scene. You left your headlight on.
No, I didn't turn my key off. And I'm sorry that I rode over your foot in that
take. Yeah, for me, I think I had a lot of preconceived notions in terms of the danger and the outlaw nature of these guys, and I think the thing that I was struck by was the, as you said, Charlie, was that sense of brotherhood and dedication, and that it really, you know, and one of the things that hit me, speaking of humor, one of the things that struck me was the fact that these guys had this this really dark sense of humor, and you know, they were really funny, you know, and it was that sort of locker room humor, you know, cranked up to a 12. But that became a really important component for me in the show, to balance, obviously, as we just saw in that scene. You know, you need some of that dark humor when you're dealing with subject matter like, you know, charred bodies. And I will say, you know, it's one of the reasons why, you know, I was attracted to, you know, we recast the role of Clay Morrow, and you know, when we recast and found Ron, one of the reasons why I wanted to recast, and I think the network wanted to recast, was because we wanted to, you know, we wanted to bring out some of that dark humor, and felt that it was really important for the head of the club, being Clay, to that have that skill set. And I think we you know, found a master of that with Ron.
I thought you were gonna say we screwed up, but
it was too late.
You know, we'd already shot it once, you know, twice.
Come back.
To ask to shoot it a third time was just way over the top.
Charlie Oak hot.
Yeah, it was a very hot day that day.
Yeah, that's when the cuts, if you'll notice how clean and pristine the cuts are in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And we started to, you know, we realized that they were...
Mess them up a little
bit. Yeah, they just started, they looked too new. Right. And that was one of the things where that's real, in that these guys really care for their cuts, and they are, most of them are pristine, and they treat the leather. But they almost looked too TV perfect for me in those first episodes, and we slowly began to age them down. If by the time we get to episode 7 or 8, they're looking, you know, like they have some life to them.
Tommy Flanagan, I love that character.
The inimitable.
Jibs, yeah. Jibs.
I'd been trying to work with Tommy for a long, long time, and my initial meeting with Kurt, he was coming out as I was going in. We'd known each other. We were supposed to do one film before. He was going to play my brother in a film I did called Green Street Hooligans, and it ended up not working out, but it was, I thought, a really good omen.
Oh, I didn't know that. You saw him that day?
Yeah, when my initial meeting with you, he was walking out as I was walking in,
right.
So...
And didn't Tommy have some, didn't he have like a reputation? He was sort of a kind of a street hero back in, you were telling me stories about him?
Yeah, Tommy's the real deal. He's from a housing estate in Glasgow called Easter House, which is, which has the reputation of being the hardest council estate in Europe, has more murders per capita than any other council estate or any other housing estate in Europe. You know, and you know, he didn't get those scars playing tennis.
There's Drea.
It was perfect.
It was perfect. It was a coup. It was really great, you know, getting her for this role, and again, it was one of those casting opportunities that, you know, we sort of had her in mind from the beginning, and you know, were able to make it happen, and luckily for us, Drea had given birth a couple months before that,
right.
You know what I mean? So she was sort of, you know, she was very concerned that she was coming in. She felt like, oh, you know, I'm not at my Adriana weight. We're like, perfect, perfect, perfect. Yeah.
The shipment gonna be a little late.
Wasn't this the first scene you shot on Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah, this is my very first day. The guy says,
"See, I'm not even in the scene."
I remember. I was driven from base camp to this park, which is in Eagle Rock, great little park, and. You know, driven there, handed my props, you know, my chains, my, you know, all the little...
Your rings.
My sex toys. Yeah. You know, my MC sex toys. And then this guy comes over to me and says, okay, here's your bike. You're going to be riding around this corner here. And then you sort of back in here. And then at the end, you peel out. I said, who? Who's going to do that? I've never been on a bike before in my life. I said, you know, dude, I got 17 pages of dialogue today, man. You know, you're going to have to get somebody else to ride the bike.
And we continue to do that ever since.
That's right. No, he's getting better.
Joke.
It's very funny. We shot that park as being Oakland, and apparently those fountains back there resemble some fairly famous park in Oakland, because I've had several people come up to me and say, you know, you got shot in Oakland at the whatever the, you know. And it's like, no, it's the hood. It's huh. L.A., it's the hood, yeah.
I love the whole manuscript thing.
The
ghost.
You
know, we follow the whole backstory of these people. I think Kurt, you did a fantastic job laying out the backstory of all these people.
Thank you. These were.
It's deep.
These are some infamous photoshopped.
Tattoo we just saw there was designed by a great tattoo artist called Freddie Corbin, who also designed the Reaper insignia for the club.
And Freddie's up in Oakland.
Yeah. I think from I don't know much about the world of tattooing, but I mentioned his name to tattoo artists, and they. Oh, Freddie.
Yeah.
He's a very, very well-known, respected guy.
Yeah, protege of Hardy's, I think.
Yeah,
he came out
absolutely,
of that camp.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. We went through about five or six voiceover actors.
Oh, to find the voice of John Teller.
And it was sort of, you know, finding somebody that had some sentimentality and some emotionality, but yet didn't feel, you know, too soft. You know,
right.
You know.
Nicholas Guest is who you settled on, yeah?
Is that who that? I'm not. I think so. Yeah.
Christopher Guest's brother.
Is it really?
Yeah. Christopher Guest of Waiting for Guffman.
Right.
Yeah.
We haven't seen this for so long.
I know.
I forget how great it is. I'm sort of mesmerized by it. Like, wow, look what we're.
And we all look so much younger.
We do. Everybody does. And shorter hair.
It was a rough season.
Kim lost some weight since back in those days.
Did he?
He'd just come off doing a film where he'd put on, you know, 20 pounds right. for the role. So,
Kim Coates, who plays Tig, was, you know, that was a character in the when we recast and reshot the pilot, we had changed the character of Hawk that was in the original pilot and recreated it as and reimagined it as the character of Tig, and that, you know, Kim was a 0 hour hire. Literally, the deal closed at 10 o'clock, and at 6 a.m. he was in the following morning at 6 a.m. he was in the trailer getting hair and makeup. And you know, the truth is, one of the main reasons he got the gig is because he could ride a bike. But it ended up being, you know, it ended up
jackpot.
It was such a jackpot, you know.
Yeah.
After like three episodes, I realized, you know, there was just so many different ways to go with that character.
He's really amazing to watch.
This was a shot of Drea there. I love that shot. That was actually a shot that Alan Coulter, who did the first pilot, you know, had created that shot, and the mix of vanilla ice cream and blood was just so fantastic.
Ah, from the mind of Kurt Sutter.
Yeah, that was from the
vanilla
mind.
Vanilla ice cream and blood.
That was from the mind of Alan Coulter. No, that was, you know. And this is really the first chapel scene, I think, right?
Yeah.
Where we see these guys around the table, you know? One of the other things we reimagined after the doing this one time was that, you know, they test pilots all the time, and one of the tests in the first pilot was that people didn't know that the clubhouse was the clubhouse. They thought it was like a local bar. And so I felt it was important to sort of, you know, do whatever we can to suggest that this place was, you know, was an MC clubhouse. And what I did is created the you know, that their weekly meeting of an MC, usually that happens on Friday nights, is called church, where they discuss all the club business and make decisions. And usually after church, there's a big club party. And so creating the room that we now call the chapel was a way to sort of isolate that and have it be something different and a different, you know, so we could suggest that, you know, that there was a meeting room and that the clubhouse just felt like what it was supposed to be and not a local bar.
Darby got out of Chino 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we'll call that Nazi prick set a meeting.
Just take them.
Oh, my goodness. I found it really difficult, as I always do. Well, it's different stages. When I find it difficult, in the rare instance that I get a job after having to audition, having to do the scene that I auditioned.
Oh, right, right. Yeah.
I find that difficult. And then when we had to reshoot all of this stuff, you know, I find that always so difficult to come back. Because it's not like doing a reshoot on a film where you're reshooting the scene because it didn't work and usually you're changing it. I mean, right. We were reshooting these scenes exactly as shot them, just with a different actor.
Right, right. You know.
And I think some of the footage was actually intercut, right? Some of the original.
We did. And, you know, we had the $2 million advantage of reshooting the pilot and learning, you know, from the previous one. But this was a sequence that I think, you know, worked in the original pilot, and then it really was trying to catch that emotionality again.
Right.
And I think, you know, I
think we did.
I think we did, and I felt it was better. I felt you went to a much deeper place as we did it again, you know.
I still haven't seen the original pilot, the first one that was shot.
I never saw it either.
Did you not? Oh.
I think they burned it.
Did they?
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't...
I know, you never showed... I never saw it.
I've never, you know, I've not seen it since.
Right. It's gone somewhere.
Actually, it was playing...
eBay.
Yeah.
At that revival theater on Beverly and La Brea.
Ron got it on LimeWire.
Go with Tara. I got something to do.
I love how many different stories there are. It's the club business, the Able business, the John Teller business. It's just it's an interesting mix.
This Dennis Kiefer, the guy that taught us all to ride.
Oh, really?
That's, yep.
Yeah.
Except for me.
Wow. Yeah. I guess he...
So crank to my pregnant ex-wife.
Right in the yeah.
And this was, you know, you know, I felt like, you know, Jax has been taken on a big emotional ride in this episode, but there was important to for me to sort of show that dangerous, that sort of compulsive, dangerous side, you know,
you showed it.
And we had an opportunity to do it there. And the network argued with me, like, forever to take away that, you know, when you're patting the guy on the back.
Right.
They're like, oh, we don't... I love that. I don't know who the guy is, but I love the fact that you pat him on the back as you just beat the shit out of somebody.
Right, that was an Alan.
So Boone, who plays Bobby, who just has this big... Jewish life symbol on his chest, the Chai. In your research, are there a lot of Jewish bikers out there?
I got the idea from some of the research I did. There was two of the charters, the clubs that I researched, had Jewish members. One currently and one in past. What I didn't realize and what I've gotten some shit about since then is that I made the Jewish guy the bookkeeper.
Right.
That wasn't my plan, but it just sort of happened that he was the secretary and the treasurer and therefore, you know, taking care of the money. That was not intentional.
Opie.
Ryan Hurst has lost a lot of weight.
Yeah.
He lost a person.
He's fantastic.
Such an interesting character, isn't he? Just so I love how he plays it and so understated.
You know, a lot of, I think it's okay to I don't want to, if people haven't watched all the episodes, but
yeah, don't give it away.
I won't. But there was a pitch on the table that Ryan really was going to be a one season character, and because of the depth that guy brought to the role, and especially the relationship with Jax, to me, it really helped symbolize that sense of brotherhood and these two guys who really probably knew each other since they were like 4 years old, you know?
Right.
And it was important to sort of, you know, keep that relationship alive.
What's the Nord's roster looking like these days?
15, 16 guys, a few new kids breaking in.
So this is always amazing to me whenever I watch it, because I think, wow, this goes on. I mean, they have conversation like this around the table.
And is that D.L. in the background there?
I think so.
Only two things feel good in the joint. That's jerking off and thinking about all the shit you're going to do when you get out.
D.L. is
technical advisor.
Yeah, he's one of our technical advisors as well. And and plays Happy. Definitely brings a fierceness to the club. We play him as being in the beginning of the season. We play him as being a member from the Tacoma Charter in Washington, so he's a visiting member.
Yes, dear.
Yeah, we're all doing our best to look like badasses on the show, and the moment the camera finds DL, it's just really shows us up.
Treasury,
all the bills are paid, bar stocked. Run fund is covered for the...
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, these meetings that happen, these weekly meetings. You know, we play slices and bits and pieces of them, but, you know, they last for hours. You know, I mean, there's a lot of business to be discussed. You know, they can last 3 and 4 hours, and...
That's why they need a party afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Let off steam.
Original is here for you. Your father would be proud of the man you've become, you know.
This guy with some gravitas, still looking.
Really? Generational.
It's interesting. It's the first time Bill has been on a motorcycle in many, many years. Mm. He was originally the police officer in Harold and Maude. And a couple weeks into filming, they were doing a sequence where he was riding over a bridge, and they pushed it, you know, made him do it quicker and quicker and quicker. And on the last take that he did, he ended up going over the side of a bridge and fell 30 or 40 foot and broke his spine. Oh. He was in hospital for 18 months recovering.
Oh, my God.
And this is actually the first time he's been on a motorcycle since then.
Yeah. And got cut out of the movie, too. They recast.
Right.
Oh, yeah,
so
no.
He's not even in the movie, yeah. But interesting, that character, not the character, but the notion of his impairment, you know, there was a guy up north who was on oxygen constantly and had a dispenser built in his bike to hold his oxygen tank so he could have the oxygen on while he was riding. And that's the impairment that we gave Piney.
And wasn't that an evolution of, by virtue of the fact that they looked so similar? Initially, they weren't father and son.
They were
right?
not father and son, and
they looked so much alike.
We had cast Bill, and then we came in and we cast Ryan, and they did. They looked so much alike that I loved the notion of them being father and son. I think it was like actually in like blue pages or something. It was pretty far on into the process that we made that change, and it's something we've really been able to capitalize.
Yeah.
Was that DL in the ring with Kim?
Yeah,
with Kim. Mm.
They're fighting out the thing that starts off in the clubhouse.
Mm-hmm. But there's a sort of an unspoken law that I've been told about in MCs that, you know, if you challenge a brother, you know, you can challenge anybody you want, but you have to be able, you know, you sort of have to put up and take what comes. So, and this is quite often how things get settled.
Right.
Look at those tats on DL. Wow.
Yeah.
Those aren't like ours.
No.
Those are the real deal.
We'll give you a little hint. He spends a minute and a half in makeup and I spend an hour.
DL's entire body was, including his head, was tattooed by the time he was 18. I mean, there was little bits of space and, you know, he's had, you know, a couple tattoos since then, but he's in a lot of tattoo books. He's a really famous guy.
All premier tattoo artists,
yeah,
right? Like
absolutely.
All famous premier, like that. Not like nothing arbitrary.
No.
Yeah.
This is the scene I auditioned with.
Mm.
And I had the same exact problem. We put it on its feet and I went, I played this already.
Don't you? Yeah. Of course.
Well, and I remember there was only one take where you actually did that. Where you actually grabbed him. And it was the take, it was, you know, it's just such a powerful thing. And and it was like one of the last takes, I think.
I remember when we shot that originally, it was one of those long drive homes where I thought I should really just kill myself and spare everyone from... I wasn't happy, so I was very glad to have the opportunity to shoot it again.
Everyone hates me. I'm sorry, Jax. I'm so sorry. Please don't hate me.
You need to get help, Wendy.
I know. I will. I promise. This time, I promise.
Freya's coming back. That's all I'll say. I know you. I know it's. Just, I don't know if she is. Or
yeah,
not,
she is. I mean, you know, it's always a question of making the deal sometimes. But she wants to come back. We have a story idea for her to come back. So, yeah, that's the plan. I think she. You know, it's interesting. It was. I think it's one of the first things that she's really done since, you know, Joey, and since having kids. You know,
mm-hmm.
So she's. You know, she. You know, it was. It was a little bit. New, it was. You know, she. It was a little bit new for her coming back and.
Oh, here's the scene I auditioned with. Oh, yes, I did an audition.
I was
just joking. Oh. Actually, this is the scene I auditioned for because they originally were going to play Gemma as a guy.
My house.
I don't want you to see it this way.
This is, I think this is one of, you know, it's, you know, I get to work out all my unresolved mommy issues, but I think this is one of my favorite scenes in the pilot, you know.
Well, I just remember Charlie wanted me to watch what I do here, and I did it a million times. And Charlie wanted me to really do it.
Yeah, yeah, you gave me a couple good slaps over the course of the night.
It's
die. Don't you say that.
Yeah.
You are
I remember watching this from Video Village, and there was a couple where... I didn't hear a slap sound, and I knew she like caught you with like the palm or the bone, and
it was just the one where you slapped my ear. It was
Charlie. You kept saying, "No, hit me harder. Come on, do it each time." So I did. I don't actually smoke, so this.
And that was me, you know, working on some of my mommy issues. Just hit me harder.
I'm a bad boy.
Oh no! Glad I could help.
Just joking, Mom.
And I just, you know, I love the idea of you know, mother and son and resolving their issues and sitting down here and smoking a joint and, you know, just I think it says a lot about the lifestyle and
their relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the denial bond.
Uh-huh.
You know, you were born with that same heart defect your little brother had.
To do a lot of research to figure out how to do it.
Smoke a joint.
Smoke a joint. Oh, yeah, that was hard for you.
Yeah.
I watched some Cheech and Chong movies.
Ah. I had to dip back into my memory.
Yeah, my research goes back a couple of decades, too.
Yeah. That bastard lived for two more days. Tellers do not die easy.
This was a, you know, this was a, hopefully an organic way to get out some historical exposition here, you know, to give some sense of what happened to John and, you know, and who these people are and what they've sort of come through, you know, in context of what he's, you know, what's the struggle that he's in right now.
You know, what it is. A brotherhood. Family.
God, I could probably remember the lines. We did it, didn't we do this a lot?
Did it quite a lot.
Did a lot.
Now, is this from the original pilot?
Yes.
This is Alan.
Shit in the storage unit. There's like pictures and journals.
Pretty much any scene that you're in, Ron, is, I'm serious, was reshot, which is about 80% of the pilot, you know? The good thing is at that point we had built all our home sets, you know, so we were able to, you know, we had the advantage of shooting them on a home set you know, and then ultimately, you know, recreate. This is actually at a real house up in Tujunga and Sunland when we film, and then, you know, recreated Jax's house on the studio as well.
Do you like to watch yourself?
I'm
not sure I do.
I'm not sure. It's easy with the sound turned down.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you didn't watch any of the episodes for
yeah,
a long
Charlie
time,
didn't
right?
watch
yeah,
them.
Yeah, not until we finished.
Yeah. And you're, is that sort of, you just wanted to stay detached from it or?
Yeah.
And not get caught up in performance of it?
Yeah, I didn't want to start second-guessing, you know, decisions that I'd made and had become well-established. And I guess I hadn't done any TV for a while. I'd just been working on films, and so you don't really get the opportunity to see anything till you're finished. And mm-hmm. so I guess that I'd gotten used to that.
Right, but, right. And then you watched them all in one sitting, pretty much.
I watched them all over the course of one day.
Wow.
Which is fantastic. To do, and then I watched the tail end of the season again right before we started shooting from you know, episode maybe 4 onwards, all in the course of a day again.
Mm.
Of course you are.
This is another, you know,
reshoot.
No, just in terms of, you know, I mean, I love all the action stuff and the testosterone stuff, but to me, you know, ultimately, this is a family drama, so it's these scenes like between Clay and Gemma, and Jax and Clay, and Clay and Gemma that really, you know, I think are the heart of the show.
What do you mean?
Found a box of John's stuff in storage.
And this is really, you know, for me, this is sort of this is where we have an opportunity to sort of ring that Shakespearean bell a little bit, you know, with the Lady Macbeth of it all, and you know, for Gemma,
right?
And you guys really, you know, did me a service here, because this is a scene that in the hands of less actors could have really felt like
that was the
drama.
Hardest part of the scene, because
what,
it was
the
really
writing, the writing sucked.
No, sweetheart. No, just to play against the melodrama that it could have been.
Exactly.
Because some of the speeches, I remember feeling very much like, wow, mm-hmm. this could really, I could sink my big drama chops into that. Mm-hmm. But the challenge is to just say the words is what I find mm-hmm. most. That's what I find a lot with your writing. It's just really to be there and say the words, because that's all you need.
When you can't ride anymore, they'll vote my son in as president. I just want to make sure he's...
And Ron, you and I have had some conversations about this, that the idea that, you know, the one person that Clay allows himself to be vulnerable with is Gemma. You know, and there's, you know, that we really are allowed to see, you know, the softer side, you know, well, my wife goes down on you. The softer side.
Jesus Christ.
No, you know, the vulnerable side of Clay, and that, you know, I think it's really important, A, for the audience to see that, but, you know, that the, you know,
Ooh,
that the
this.
Character has that ability, you know.
I love this scene. I I love how this scene looks.
Without thinking things through.
Well, my guys are thinking just fine.
They thinking fine when they sell crank to my pregnant ex.
That was unfortunate. How's your little family doing anyway?
All right, everybody contain your shit. Get off! You done?
Yeah.
Mitch.
Sorry, folks.
Pledgy.
Back to your corn dogs. Won't happen again.
Who's been in so many things. You can't, you know, I didn't realize he was on the X-Files.
He was smoking, smoking man, right?
No, he was, he was their boss.
Boss, that's right.
No, he's one of those journeyman guys.
Yeah, he and Kim are like really, I mean, some of the more prolific character actors in the business.
Mm-hmm.
Between the two of them, I think they've been in four or 500 films.
Wow.
Or it seems that way anyway.
It's one of those things that I just arbitrarily had in the first time we shot this, which is really a very benign point. But when I first shot this, I wore that Reaper hat. And then right at the last second before we started shooting the scene, when we did the first take, I decided I was going to take it off and not wear it. And it's bugged me ever since.
You wish you'd worn it?
Yeah.
Mm.
Which really is obviously neither here nor there, but I just thought I'd share with you what I was thinking about right now.
Wish I had that hat on. The scene would be so much better. This filmed at the Astro Burger.
Yeah. In Hollywood?
No, in Los. I think it's in Los.
Los
Feliz.
Feliz, yeah. It's,
Astros.
Astros. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Astros.
On the corner of Glendale and.
One of my best friends came that morning to eat at Astros. It was like, goddamn Hollywood people filming in my coffee shop can't have breakfast.
That place is like a time warp, though. It's great. It feels like an old 50s.
I love this with the lovely Maggie Siff. Yes. She's really a great pushback.
This was from the original shoot. Mm-hmm.
Just let her know she's not all alone.
I remember that.
Nothing I'm going to say to
the Veterans Hospital, isn't it, that we're shooting in?
Mm-hmm.
Forgot just how forthright you can be. Forgot a lot of things, sweetheart. If you have a problem with me assisting on...
Yeah, this is a... This is a location that you'll never see again on the show.
Why is that? What's wrong?
Because it's a location. It's the Veterans Hospital or something. Yeah.
History.
There's some things you can't change. I leave it there, so I remember all that shit's behind me. Forgot just how clever.
And just to connect the dots, that you know the tattoo that Gemma has on her chest
is the same one,
and that Wendy has.
Where's hers? I can't remember what
Wendy's
is
on her. On her arm, I think. And that Maggie has on her back are all the same crow eater tattoo.
Don't try too hard to cover his tracks.
And he also knows it would be under the cut shops. He wouldn't take.
They're probably wanting us to go back to work. That's why they're hoping that they're just finding us, no matter where we are.
Alvarez's dummy corporations in San Leandro.
It's a big show. It's a big show to shoot. You know, I mean, I mean every episode. I think that people would find that interesting. Is that, you know, we shoot it in 7 days, and it's a lot of story. It's a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely guerrilla filmmaking. We have, you know, 7-8 pages a day, and
this is a great relationship too. This, what I love about this relationship, just shows the actual down home family life of these people.
Right.
You know, this is the meat and potatoes of it.
Yeah, and the idea that not only do you have to worry about getting your kids on to school on time, but you have to worry about whether or not your husband's blowing up buildings. You know what I mean? It's just,
right.
It's like problems that, you know, that sort of fall into the right. category of everyday things, you know?
Give me the bag. Give me the bag!
No!
And Sprague Gridden was so great.
Mm-hmm. Not happy with the MC life.
Not thrilled by it.
Not thrilled. Oh, see, I hate when the kids have to watch.
You gotta get used to it. Gotta break them in sometime. Kind of like our kids.
Uh,
No, I actually think those are Ryan's tattoos on his neck, aren't they?
Are they?
Are they his?
No.
They're not? No.
But he picked them, I think.
No, but he does have a lot of ink.
Yeah,
on
he,
him.
He yeah, does.
I thought,
yeah.
I didn't know. I thought those
I
were
I thought
his.
He was very specific, though, too, about what he wanted to have put on.
He was. He yeah. had them all designed.
All designed. And
as did I.
It's the level of commitment.
I don't show up, Clay will chop off both of
them. I just take what they give me. And I don't know if you noticed, but mine changes from week to week.
Yeah, it's really weird. You're in the first episode of season two. You have a big clown on your chest.
That's right. Right, so.
I'll call you on the prepay if I need help.
You sure about this?
Go fix your family.
This is actually a location that we go back to a lot. This is Opie's house, and this is, again, we film most of our exterior, up in Tujunga, Sunland. Our main, our studio home base, our primary lot is in North Hollywood. Tujunga is probably about a 20-minute drive. And it's a small town. It's interesting. It's a, some of the smaller, more depressed communities north of Los Angeles feel like Northern California because they couldn't afford to import all the palm trees back in the 30s and 40s.
Oh.
So there's no, that's why there's very few palm trees. It's all indigenous trees, so it feels more like Northern Cali. And from what I'm told, Sunland had a serious motorcycle problem, gang problem or club problem in the 60s and 70s.
Right.
Yeah, it was a big. There was a lot of activity.
A lot of rival clubs and stuff.
I'm actually riding it in that show.
You are riding it.
Yeah. That's the power of computer graphic imaging.
No, you were writing at first.
Yeah.
You're
And then we all thought better of it.
Well, you know, it takes a little time to get up to the level of some of the stuff we need to do, and I know that...
Isn't it harder to write in formation? Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, yeah, it is harder to write in formation than writing by yourself, because, you know, generally when clubs ride in formation, I mean, these guys, you know, the clubs that, you know, the guys that I've met that are in clubs, you know, really ride, you know, they're really, really good. And they ride in very, very close proximity in those formations at high speed. You know, the smallest error is going to, you know, ruin your day.
Mm-hmm. And really it's, you know, it's riding slow and riding close, that's the most difficult thing to do, especially with a bike the size of a Harley, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, any of those things, where the slower you are, you know, the more difficult it is to control those bikes.
Yeah, every time I've dropped a bike is usually when it's been parked or while I'm parking, you know what I mean? It's when I'm doing something like that.
God, remember that we worked some long, long hours before we figured out how to shoot this show and the amount of time we did. I mean, some 16, 17, 18-hour days. I remember that warehouse, the last warehouse day, we worked 20, 21, 22 hours, Ron, something like that.
Yeah, we had to stop because it was daylight.
Right.
We were shooting night, and we weren't prepared to go, day for night.
Right.
And when the sun came up, we had to pull the plug.
Right.
This is such a cool show.
The Colonel.
Yeah, this was the...
Sweet Jesus!
He was pretty funny, this guy.
Oh, sweet Jesus!
That was Alan Coulter's favorite shot in the pilot. The floor-level shot of Asian Elvis squirming.
And then Michael Dinner came in and did the...
Michael Dinner did the reshoot. So we were lucky to get two very talented guys
really
to help us put this together.
Harvard graduate, Michael Dinner.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Finding a lot of directors and working in this building business from either Harvard or Yale or Dartmouth. Very bright guys.
Do you know the very first picture I was an extra on. I was like a teenager, and was Michael Dinner's first movie called Heaven Help Us, where I played a Catholic schoolboy. And I was telling Michael that, and he said the other guy that came up to him and told him the same story was Aaron Sorkin. So apparently wow. Aaron Sorkin and I played Catholic boys
in
his movie, Heaven Help Us, with Donald Sutherland and I think it was Kevin Dillon.
You know, my father was a director, Harvard graduate.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means.
One of the most surreal moments I've ever had was I was doing Cold Mountain. I was riding my horse, and I wasn't working that day, and I just rode down from the mountains and into base camp. And there's this giant base camp, but everyone was up on set. And then all of a sudden, a trailer door opened, and Donald Sutherland walked out in nothing but a pair of tighty whities and cowboy boots. And he saw me looking at him in abject horror, raised his arms up in the air and said, "I could have been a contender."
Wow.
That's an interesting response.
Yeah.
It's great. And on his way to lunch or just
I guess on his way somewhere. I didn't really stick around.
This is Charlie. There you go, Charlie. Good decoy.
I wrote the piece of music for them.
They camp out here, they get some of this. You had to clear that. You had to sign off on it, didn't you?
Yeah. I don't know if I got any residuals yet, if anyone's tried to, you know, re-record it or anything yet.
You tell your dirtbag buddies.
Oh, we can sing that, right? Because it's my...
Can you remember it, Charlie?
Yeah. When your bladder's full, you gotta piss, you filthy dumpster. Take some of this, I'm gonna piss all over you, and then I'm gonna eat your food.
Yay!
And then I'm gonna eat your food.
That is the only extant full version with all the stanzas intact of that performance ever given, ladies and gentlemen. The beautiful, the talented Charlie Hunnam. All yours.
BP's dropping.
Now this is their operating on charging. Baby Abel here, and it's
you clear? Touch and go.
Touch and go, and
what was that?
You know, the idea that, you know, the karmic idea that, you know, Charlie deciding not to kill this guy, you know, the karmic result is, you know, the baby lives, although in self-defense, he turns around and kills somebody else.
Why? Got the vest.
Finish it.
There was some debate, right, whether I should have actually shot him or not in this. Or maybe not. I was privy to a...
Yeah, I think
in your tone meeting or something, yeah. I can't remember either Michael Dinner or Coulter had thought that I should and you were...
I liked the idea that, you know, that ultimately you are responsible for his death, but that... You know, that, you know, what you didn't do is sort of kill him
in cold blood. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that it's important we see him die.
Right, sure.
So.
Darby's guy.
Like Darby did make some new friends in Chino.
He's becoming, he's a conflicted guy. Jackson.
Yeah, and it really begins, it sets up the whole dynamic with Clay and the impact of you know, the ghost showing up and the sun being born.
Was that Theo?
No, I just absolutely shit myself.
when
he plays the end of a long night.
Yeah, yeah.
That must have been fun.
That was fun. That was my Scarface moment.
The two sats are coming up.
Yeah, we It's amazing that all this stuff cut together. We literally did this on one take.
I know the fire marshal pulled the plug.
We were able to piece it with, you know, things from the previous shoot and really make it work. But this, we had one shot at this.
Candles in the cake.
Candles in the cake. And I will tell you that that actor, that stuntman, was such a trooper. And, you know,
Sense of humor, too.
Let me tell you, on the day, nobody else would put that stick of dynamite in his ass. Like, they kept putting it near his legs. And I literally had to go, no, this is where I want it. I'm the one that had to stick it in his ass. And I felt so bad, and the guy was such a trooper, that when we reshot it, I actually put him in that diner scene and gave him a couple of lines.
Hi.
This is a great scene.
Yeah, this is, I think, one of those defining scenes in the pilot, really, that informs the audience who Gemma is, and
who she isn't,
and who she isn't, you know.
Maybe we should say a little.
But this is really, this is big stuff here. This is Shakespeare level stuff.
Dear God,
what goes down in this scene?
Thank you for saving this boy from his murderous junkie. Who cared more about a $40 rush than she did her own flesh?
You two are so great in this scene.
Dare. Don't I dare? You pathetic whore. Guess the DA was impressed with your Bible studies. Here they're not gonna press charges. When I check out of here, I'm going into promises. Let's just throw money at those 12-step freaks. How long's it gonna last this time? 6 months? Three? A couple of weeks? It's gonna be different this time. This time I have my baby to live for. That's where you're wrong. You have no baby. You lost that privilege. And you so much. It's cast a shadow on that kid. Try to turn some legal screw and get custody. I will finish this job.
And this is from the original shoot with Alan.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't redo it.
Yeah.
So good, Katie. Yeah.
I remember how I think that the main direction I kept getting was, Kurt, you kept saying cold, icy.
I think, and
once again, a scene where it could have been very big, right. You know, it could have really been dramatically.
One of Drea's great moments in that is when you first say to her, let's say a prayer.
Yeah.
Just look at her face is like,
okay.
Okay. Like, I know this is going someplace bad.
It's going to be okay.
Looks good.
This hug.
And then.
This says so much.
Yeah, this was an opportunity to say, you know, to show some history. And, and you guys, you know, took it to a much more intimate place than I ever had imagined it going to, which was cool, you know. Get into the boon of it all. I will say I love the notion of this guy being an Elvis impersonator. However, and I've said this before in interviews, you know, the expense of doing anything Elvis related is you know, was just like crazy. You know, every time you use the likeness of Elvis, every time you use a song, it you know, it just was not a very budget friendly character trait. Would it be
good? And that shot's for the ladies.
I think that's the first reveal of that too, right? The full tattoo on the back.
Full back patch.
Yeah.
I can't believe how much is in this pilot.
I know it is.
This pilot is
Well, this pilot, it was an hour and a half on air.
It was?
Yeah, it's 57 minutes. And the idea was that hopefully we were going to get some kind of sponsorship to be able to run a full hour, and that didn't happen. So it did run over an hour and a half. But most of our episodes, fill the hour time slot and are roughly around 42 minutes.
Jesus. That was well executed, that moment.
Yeah.
Is this really Boone singing?
No, it is not. I forget who the artist, Bob Thiel, our music guy, found our Elvis.
Lewis.
And I know I loved Alan Coulter did the Elvis, and his notion was to have it look like something from the Mike Douglas show, which I loved. Yeah, that sort of 70s oranges. And
this is one of those other scenes where I really didn't want to have to shoot again.
For me, this, I always sort of had this notion of there being a tableau of the trilogy at the end. And I think in an earlier, and initially it included Tara, but ultimately when that cut together, it just felt a little too, on the money, on the nose. So.
And you would always specifically wanted that red exit sign in there. Right?
I did, and it worked and it didn't work. So I liked what it said. Sort of hanging over Tara's head as being the exit.
Right.
That was the notion. That was the idea.
Right.
But it ended up playing out a lot cleaner, just sort of with Clay walking in. So.
Right.
And that wraps us up.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks, for joining us for the pilot episode of season 1, Sons of Anarchy.
Great. Thank you.